The Google Android Git Tag story has 621 points and 245 comments, which for a fairly technical story about source code repository management is a striking engagement number. The short version, surfaced by the Graphene OS team via Mastodon, Google has stopped pushing Git tags for some portions of the Android open source project. Tags in a Git repository serve as stable reference points. They let you say this commit is version X in a way that's permanent and independently verifiable. Stopping tag pushes means consumers of the source code can no longer easily verify which version they're looking at or track changes between releases.
Graphene OS, for listeners who don't know, is a privacy-focused Android fork that does serious security hardening work. They depend on AOSP source access, not just to build their own OS, but to audit what's changed between Android releases, which is security critical work. When you're building a hardened operating system on top of someone else's codebase, you need to be able to precisely track what that codebase contains and how it changes. Removing Git tags degrades that ability meaningfully.
The HN thread is running along two parallel tracks. One is the technical discussion about why Google might have made this change. The theories range from build system refactoring that made tag maintenance painful, to deliberate reduction of AOSP utility as an independent development platform, to simple organizational neglect of something nobody senior enough cared about. The other track is more philosophical. What does open source mean when the entity controlling the source makes unilateral decisions that degrade the community's ability to use it?
This is a live version of a governance question that the open source world has been circling for years. Android is nominally open source under the Apache license, and Google does publish the source code. But the relationship between AOSP and the commercial Android ecosystem has always been asymmetric. Google controls the roadmap, the release schedule, the certification requirements for Google Play, and apparently the Git tag infrastructure. The community can read the source. They can't meaningfully influence the process.
The comparison that keeps coming up in comments is to the Android kernel versus the mainline Linux kernel. Linux has clear governance structures, Linus Torvalds, subsystem maintainers, a documented merge process. AOSP has Google. When Google does something the community doesn't like, there's no formal mechanism for community input, no appeal process, no governance board. You can fork as Graphene OS has done, but forking doesn't give you influence over the upstream. It just means you're tracking upstream changes at arm's length.
What makes this concrete is the downstream security implications. If security researchers and alternative OS developers can't efficiently track changes to AOSP, that's a meaningful reduction in the ecosystem's collective ability to find and respond to vulnerabilities. The security benefit of open source isn't just that the code is available in principle, it's that a community of motivated people is actively auditing it. Anything that makes that auditing harder has real costs.
On a completely different frequency, the OS 8088 project has 98 points and 46 comments, and it's a labor of love. Someone running an IBM XD-era operating environment in a browser, with a working CP or M2.2 implementation with a Z80 core and MS Word 1.1a. The comments are warm and nostalgic in a way that HN comments rarely are. Lots of people sharing memories of specific machines, specific software, specific frustrations with Word's print formatting circa 1983.
The Sector 4th project, a 16-bit x86 4th implementation that fits in a 512-byte boot sector, is in similar territory, though it's more technically impressive as an exercise. 4th is a stack-based language with an interesting philosophical history. It was designed to run on minimal hardware by Charles Moore in the late 1960s, and it's had devoted practitioners ever since precisely because its minimalism makes it legible in a way that modern software stacks aren't. Getting a working 4th into a single boot sector is a demonstration of what radical constraint does to software design.
The Cricut Maker story, 219 points, 55 comments, connects to the Android discussion in an interesting way. The author reverse-engineered a locked Cricut Maker they pulled from e-waste and restored it to functionality. Cricut makes craft cutting machines, and they have a software model where the machine's features are gated by a subscription. A machine that's been deactivated by the manufacturer is essentially a brick, even if it's physically functional. The post documents the process of breaking that lock.
The HN community's response to this is predictably enthusiastic, and the right to repair angle is explicit in the comments. What's interesting is the specific framing around e-waste. This machine ended up in a recycling stream because the manufacturer made it non-functional without consent, and a technically capable person with enough time and curiosity brought it back to life. Multiply that by the millions of devices that get discarded because software locks make them inoperable, and you have a significant material waste problem with a clear proximate cause.
The wind start? That deep dive from Raymond Chen's Old New Thing blog is the kind of historical documentation that HN readers love. It's about an obscure batch file that Windows for Workgroups and early Windows 9x systems would automatically execute from the root of the C drive if present, allowing users to run programs before Windows itself started. The existence of this mechanism, its behavior, and the edge cases it created are the kind of institutional knowledge that lives only in the heads of people who were there. Chen's blog is an ongoing act of archaeological preservation for Windows internals history.